we've learned anything from these past couple of years, my fellow Americans, it's that personal medical freedom and liberty are in crisis. America Out Loud Pulse brings together the top experts in healthcare-related fields to keep you a beat ahead.
I once had a patient in a coma, but the hospital charged her for 3 meal trays a day. This is Dr. Marilyn Singleton, and welcome to America Out Loud Pulse on America Out Loud Radio Network. In 2021, out-of-pocket spending by U.S. citizens on their healthcare was over $4 billion, and out-of-pocket expenses are co-insurance, deductibles, and services not covered by insurance, but that doesn't include the insurance premium. The average person in America pays $456 a month for marketplace insurance. And for a lot of folks, health insurance is paid by the employer, so the cost of insurance is somewhat hidden to them. A key problem with insurance is the total ignorance of the charges until after the service is performed. The third-party payer system encourages overspending and higher prices. According to one study, employees who used a price transparency tool paid between 10 and 17% less than employees who did not use that service. Worse, the health insurance system oftentimes doesn't come through when you really need it. And then a lot of people are dissatisfied. A big survey by the American Hospital Association found that 80% of patients and nurses and doctors said insurer policies and practices are reducing access to medical care and driving up costs and calling physician burnout. And sometimes our lawmakers work against us. They've limited physician-owned hospitals, even though data shows that both commercial negotiated prices and cash prices in physician-owned hospitals were one-third lower than the bigger hospitals on 8 common services. And physician-owned hospitals tend to have higher quality care. So what are we to do? GoFundMe crowdfunding has become a method for patients to pay their bills. They say there's about 200,000 requests a year related to medical causes, but this clearly is not a permanent solution. My guests will discuss some tools for paying less in a system that a lot of times is not looking out for you. And my guest is back by popular demand. I dedicate this show to Sharon, and I'd like to introduce you to Marshall Allen. He's a journalist who spent more than 15 years investigating the healthcare industry. He's the founder of Allen Health Academy, which produces a curriculum of short on-demand videos to equip and empower employees to navigate the healthcare system. He's the author of, I love this title, Never Pay the First Bill and Other Ways to Fight the Healthcare System and Win. Marshall Allen, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's such an honor to be back here with you.
Well, let's just get started. I want to know, and I mean, because you were in full-time ministry, you worked in Nairobi in Kenya, how did you become interested in healthcare?
Well, you know, I sometimes call myself an accidental journalist because I never, accidental healthcare journalist, because I never intended on covering healthcare. It was when I was a journalist at the Las Vegas Sun newspaper in Las Vegas, my editor came and sat me down for lunch and said, hey, we want you to start covering healthcare. And my first words were, I can't imagine anything more boring than writing about healthcare. I just knew nothing about it. So I had been fortunately quite healthy up in my life up to that point. I'm still healthy now, but you know, I was healthy and I was young. And so I hadn't had a lot of interaction with the healthcare system. So what I had seen was a lot of press releases. And when you're a journalist, you get overwhelmed with dozens and dozens, sometimes a day, of press releases from big healthcare companies trying to get you to write about their product or their new procedure or their new drug or whatever it is. There is so much money in healthcare that they are trying to influence everything that you see in the media. And so I had been really turned off by a lot of the healthcare stories I saw, and I didn't really understand anything about it. And once I started writing about it, though, I always looked at the healthcare system from the point of view of the patient. And you mentioned my ministry background. So I spent 5 years in full-time Christian ministry. I went to seminary. I have a master's degree in theology. And I have always done my journalism very much from a moral and ethical point of view. So I do investigative journalism, and I try and stand up for what's right. And I'm not uncomfortable calling out things that are wrong. And so as soon as I took my moral and ethical mindset and applied it to healthcare from the point of view of the patients, it led to incredible stories. I could not believe the things I was seeing. And I still can't believe the things I'm seeing, Marilyn. I mean, I continue to be astonished. I've been writing about this now for more than 17 years, just solely focused on healthcare. And I am continually astonished by the deception in the industry, by the unethical conduct, by the price gouging, by the sloppiness, the inaccurate billing. I mean, it really is overwhelming to see just how unfair this is for patients.
Well, I'm so glad there's people like you out there investigating this. I think day in and day out, people feel like they're getting the shaft, but a lot of times they don't really understand the system and they don't really know why. And so they don't fight it. Why do you think people don't fight these bills when in their heart they know something's wrong?
Well, I think you hit on a key component of it. People don't understand the system, and they unfortunately trust that the system has what's best for them at heart. And I only came to my understanding of this because I did investigative journalism about it for 17 years. I mean, so when I would do stories, I would have patients, you know, patients often call the media because they can't get any justice anywhere else and they can't get people to listen to them. And so I've written hundreds of stories about patients who have been harmed physically and financially by the healthcare system. And with each of these stories, I would ask the patient, for the sake of my story, to waive their HIPAA privacy rights so I could get their medical records. I could have experts look at their medical records. I would call their hospital, their doctor, their insurance company, anybody involved in that story, because the patient waived their HIPAA privacy rights, would be allowed to talk to me about what happened in that case with that patient. And so I was able to get a really holistic look at what happens in healthcare. I've talked to thousands of experts now in hospitals, insurance companies, patients, insurance brokers, employers. And so I've gotten a deep and broad understanding of how our healthcare system actually works. And believe me, it does not work the way people think it does. Starting with, you think that because you go to the doctor or the hospital, that they care about you. And it's true, your clinicians do care about you. They do. I would say, generally speaking, the doctors, the nurses, the physical therapists, the people who are caring for us, do have our best interests at heart. They really are trying to take care of us. But on the financial side, this is where the business minds have taken over the US healthcare system, and they see it as a massive profit center. And so they charge prices that are unfair. They make a lot of mistakes with the billing, and they aren't accountable for them. And what you have is a system where the big players, the pharmaceutical companies, the drug companies, drug and pharmaceutical companies, insurance companies, hospitals, doctors, they're really all working together to keep escalating the cost of care. And it's almost more like a cartel type of behavior where all the big stakeholders work together to raise the cost of care. And sometimes I like to say, like I have a line in my book where I say, you know, the healthcare system isn't broken. It was made this way. I mean, it is by design that the healthcare system is taking more of our money than it should. And until we stand up against it, it's going to continue to do so.
It's very interesting you mentioned the pharmaceutical companies as part of this big conglomerate. I noticed that Lilly has these new ads out where instead of calling themselves a pharmaceutical company, they're calling themselves a medicine company. And I find this interesting advertising. So even they know that they have to get away from people thinking they're all in it for the money and they're all in it for the business. And the thing is, I'm a capitalist. Business is fine. Making a profit is fine. And they have to make some money to come up with these new medicines. But talk about spin. I just found that quite interesting.
Yeah, and there's a fine line between making a profit and profiteering. And so, of course, I believe that there's a free market solution to the problem we have in healthcare right now. And that's empowering the consumers, the patients, and empowering the employers who are also consumers, spending a lot of money on healthcare. But in terms of the marketing, I love that you pointed that out about the medicine versus pharmaceutical. Look at what they say. Don't look at what they say. Look at what they do. And that's the thing that we need to stop doing. You know, the hospital down the street, the doctor associations, the pharmaceutical companies, the insurance companies, the way they advertise themselves, the way they market themselves, all the taglines on all their websites are all about healing and helping and rescuing and saving your life and caring. But the behavior does not illustrate that on the financial side. And if you don't think they can do something about the cost of care, you know, these are multi-billion, hundreds of billions of dollars of company, hundreds of dollars a year in revenue per year for a lot of these companies. If they wanted to turn their attention to lowering the cost of care while providing better care, they could do that. But that's not the aim. The goal of these companies is not to lower the cost of healthcare. They have shareholders that they have to respond to. They're for-profit, and even the nonprofits act like for-profits. So they are really trying to bring in more and more money, and that means they want us to pay more and more money.
Well, it's interesting that another big ad campaign, and you've probably seen it when you are involved in healthcare policy and get these emails. And the hospital system has come out with this big comparison chart why they're helping out patients, but insurers aren't. Well, the hospital systems have become insurers. They're kind of making it look like they're separate. And one of the things that is striking me, and maybe there is a reason all this stuff is coming out now in Congress, they're talking about so-called site-neutral payments, where if you get something done at a small surgery center or even in a doctor's office, there's a different price than if you go to the hospital. Can you explain what's all behind this and how the hospitals are allowed to get away with, I don't know, sometimes it's triple, quadruple the cost of the same procedure?
Oh, it's much more expensive to get anything done in the hospital. And that's why one of the first tips I talk about in my book and in my videos and other resources is don't go to the hospital unless you absolutely have to, because there could be a place to get that care that's a much lower cost of care. But there's examples all over the place of this. You know, I've seen MRIs or CT scans are commonly $3,000, $4,000, or $5,000 in the hospital, and you could get those for $400 or $500 at an independent surgery center. So there, you're looking at 10 times more you might be paying for imaging tests. Same is true for lab tests. You know, if you have those done in a hospital, there's going to be a massive markup on those. So even if you go to your local doctor and your doctor's affiliated with a hospital and they tell you to go have your blood taken down the hall and it's hospital affiliated, you're going to get hit with those larger charges. They also add facility fees onto those hospital costs. Even if it's just, there's examples where you'll be going to the same clinic for your OBGYN or your family medicine type of a clinic. You pay one price, then they get taken over by the hospital. They start adding a facility fee. It could be hundreds of dollars per visit to your bill. It's the same doctor, same facility, but they've now been owned by a hospital. And so they're going to be adding all of these charges to your bill. In terms of the site-neutral payments, you know, I don't, I'm not an expert on the legislation, and I don't really take a position on legislation. But what I would just argue for is, how about just show the prices up front? You know, how about just show the prices and let people know that they might be able to find a better price elsewhere? You know, if you went to a hospital and they said, okay, hey, time to get your CT scan, go down the hall to our imaging center, and they said, the price for your CT scan here is $5,000. And by the way, I've seen a CT scan from a hospital where they charge $18,000. So a 5,000 is outrageous enough, but sometimes, you know, it can be even worse than that. So don't underestimate how outrageous the prices can be. But I just think that they need to comply with the rules that require them to post their prices online. That's the Hospital Price Transparency Final Rule. And a lot of hospitals are complying with it. And that's why you're seeing such a massive movement now of consumer behavior, because now that hospitals are posting their prices online where they're complying with that federal rule, you're seeing this price variation for yourself. And a place like, I recommend people check out a website called Billy. Billy is an app or a website that is scraping all these hospital websites, downloading all these prices for every different type of procedure, and they're making it available online in a really easy to look at, searchable map. So you can see the different prices in your community at the hospitals in your community. And it doesn't have the prices right now for all the different independent imaging centers, say, or surgery centers, but that is happening now. You're seeing now people submitting data to Billy. They're loading it on their website, and you're seeing much more of these price comparisons now. And that's super useful before you go to get care, but it's also useful after you go to get care. And so the site neutral is a big issue. I love that they're pushing for change on that. What I'm afraid might happen, though, is what I don't want to have happen, I don't want them to raise all the prices in all the independent, you know, places that are outside the hospital. I think hospitals need to bring their prices down, but what I don't want to see is all the independent places bringing their prices up. I just think we need to have prices that are fair and prices that are disclosed. And you need to see a menu of prices when you go get some type of service. They need to tell you what it's going to cost.
Well, you bring up a very good point. There's a way to make it equal. Yeah, you can make them equally higher. After we come back from the break, I'd like you to just talk about how much waste there is in the system. And this is something that is near and dear to my heart because when a lot of people say, well, let the government take it over, my goodness, if you read the DOJ reports, there's so much fraud and abuse in the government programs. It's like it seems the bigger a program is, the easier it is to scam. So we'll talk about some waste and then get into very specific things that you can do to help yourself. So we'll get into that after the break.
You've all heard Dr. McCullough and others share over and over the value of keeping your sinuses cleansed. It's a smart move all year, but even more so when we're cooped up inside. It's not really open for debate any longer. Those that live smart and live well pay attention to nasal and oral hygiene. Cofix RX has just the tools for the job with our nasal and throat cleanse. Click the Cofix RX banner on AmericaOutloud.shop to get 20% off your entire order. That's right, AmericaOutloud.shop. Use coupon code OUTLOUD. That's coupon code OUTLOUD for 20% off your entire order.
Use Cofix RX because it works.
Cholesterol, blood pressure, blood sugar, inflammation, and weight. These are all real-world problems that 87% of Americans are struggling with. Often, there are no symptoms, but left unattended, we become inundated with one health problem after another. It's time to fight back with HealRight. HealRight is a bar that you eat, but it's food as medicine that addresses the nutritional root cause of health issues in just 8 weeks. Developed by world-renowned scientists and backed by 15 years of research, HealRight is effective, but it's also delicious and works without additional diet or lifestyle changes. Step out of the statistics and use food as medicine. Visit HealRight.com/outloud or AmericaOutloud.shop and use the code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
Before the break, I was asking Marshall Allen about waste in healthcare And would it help if the government paid for everything? Or is there some advantage to having private insurers be part of the so-called system? And how do we get rid of some of this waste? And then we'll talk about some very specific things that you can do to lower your costs. So first we'll talk about the waste in the system.
Definitely. So I spent more than a year doing nothing but looking at wasted healthcare spending. And this was one of the most fascinating investigative projects I ever took on, because they estimate that the U.S. healthcare system might be wasting as much as 25% of what we spend. And we spend about $4 trillion a year on healthcare. So we're looking at about up to $1 trillion in wasted spending per year. And it's wasted on things like the ridiculous prices that we pay. So that's one area of waste. Also, the administrative bloat in the system. I mean, one way you can see that administrative bloat is just the complicated way we pay for healthcare. We have thousands of different insurance plans, all with different policies, all that reset every year. The prices vary every place you go. So imagine how administratively complex that is to just process those payments. They estimate that if we were to simplify our payment system, we could save hundreds of billions of dollars a year. That's billions with a B. So when you look at the waste in healthcare, it's just astonishing how high it is. In fact, at the time I wrote about this, a National Institute of Medicine study had come out that showed that the amount of money wasted in healthcare is more than the entire budget of the entire Department of Defense. So all of the money that we spend on military spending is less than the amount of money we waste on healthcare every year. And so part of the reason it's important to think about this is because rather than keep demanding more money from working people, employers, and taxpayers, the healthcare system needs to learn to tighten its belt, be more efficient, find ways to save the money that they're taking from us rather than continuing to push us to just keep feeding this system that's so completely wasteful.
Well, this is a really good overview of a picture that I think in people kind of inside feel that there's got to be a lot of waste. People know costs of things, and there's a difference between a price and a true value of the service you're getting. And sometimes these things don't compute. And a lot of times people will have a friend who got the same drug for one-tenth the price of what they paid, and they got theirs through their insurance. So there's a lot of ways out there and a lot of things people don't know about, and they might hear about it by happenstance. Well, here we're going to talk about some specifics and how people can fight these ridiculously high bills that, as you say, they don't have to be that high. So what's the first thing you need to do when you get a bill?
Well, you know, it's funny that you asked me this, Marilyn, because I just got a medical bill yesterday that I would classify as a bogus bill. And I use the term bogus bill to describe any bill that is inaccurate or unfairly priced. And I'll give you an example. It's from my own healthcare experience. So I'm a middle-aged man. I'm 51 years old. And I had a little bit of rosacea on my face. And so, you know, kind of this redness, a little bit of a rash. It wasn't anything severe, anything serious, but I wanted to have it looked at. So I went to my local dermatologist just a few weeks ago, and I walked into the clinic, and it was a PA or nurse practitioner that saw me. I said, "Hey, I have a little of this redness on my nose." She said, "That's rosacea." And I said, "Oh, okay, thank you. Is there anything we can do about it?" And she said, "Yep, I'll prescribe you a cream that you can put on that, and that will help you." We had a conversation, total time, 5 minutes, 10 minutes maximum for this visit. Was it complicated? No, it was not complicated. It was as simple as I just described to you. I mean, how many times do you think they see rosacea in a dermatologist clinic? This is probably one of the most common types of things that they see. So there's a way to code these bills. So when I got my bill, I was like, oh, this will be a really good test to see now just how they're going to bill this. Because when you go to your doctor's office for a visit, or when you go to an emergency room, they can bill this visit at one of five different levels. So a level one visit would be a really simple visit that takes the shortest amount of time. That does not include high degrees of complexity with the decision making or the diagnosis. It doesn't require a big medical history to be taken or a thorough exam to be done. And so that's a level one. You get paid the least for a level one. And then, of course, a level five is the most complicated visit, life or death, very complicated decision making. A thorough examination is done. Well, I got my bill and they coded this. It's a CPT code. These are the types of codes that they use. So whenever you get your medical bill, you want to make sure it's an itemized bill that itemizes each service that you received with the billing code for those services. And the billing codes are just the lexicon that the healthcare industry uses to translate the medical records into the medical bills. And so it's easy to look these up online. And they coded this at a 99204. So that's a level four visit. So that's just one step below the most complicated type of a visit. This type of a visit, if you look it up online, and again, these are really easy to look up online. And so what I tell people do is get your itemized medical bill with the billing codes and then look up the description of these codes. And this is for a new patient office visit. Okay, that's true. It was a new patient visit or other outpatient visit lasting between 45 and 59 minutes. Well, okay, there the record scratches to a stop. This was not a 45-minute visit. It wasn't a 59-minute visit. It was a 5-minute visit that they're now coding as a 99204. So when we talk about wasted healthcare spending, this is what's called upcoding. Upcoding, now it could have been a mistake, but my guess is that they bill every new patient at a 99204. They don't even pay attention to what services were actually provided. But my guess is that this clinic just has a habit of billing these as a lengthy visit for new patients. Well, if they would have done a full exam, or if they would have taken a medical history or talked to me about a little more than just the little rash I had on my face, that would have been no problem. Okay, I understand that, but that isn't what happened. And so this is upcoding. So this is, I believe upcoding is the most common type of fraud that is normalized in our healthcare system. You have the billing departments for doctors, hospitals, putting their finger on the scale of the payment system to leverage it in their favor to make us pay more than we should. So in this case, I'm going to call this dermatology department, this office, and I'm going to explain to them that this was not a level four visit. This was a level one or a level two visit, and they need to recode it accordingly, or they need to adjust my bill and make sure that they aren't requiring me and my insurance plan to overpay for this.
Well, this is, it's a sort of thing, I'm sure as people are listening, they're saying, oh my goodness, how am I going to look at these codes and all that? And yes, it does put some work on you that you shouldn't have to do. But, you know, think about it when you go to the grocery store. These days, a lot of people are reading the back of packages to see how if there's trans fats or some of these, you know, weird stuff that they're putting in food these days. And we have to kind of look at it like that, that yes, it takes extra time, but in the end, it pays off for you. What's, if you find this, okay, so let's say you find that it's been upcoded, you talk to the folks, they don't do anything about it. Is there any way to appeal these things to the insurer?
Well, there is. And before we get to that, I want to key in on what you said, that this isn't fair to the consumer. This is not fair to the patient that we have to deal with this nonsense. So we have to just lay that out on the table as it is, right? It is completely wrong that we are put in this position where we have to play defense to protect our bank accounts from being pilfered by these unethical billing practices. But at the same time, we also have to recognize that who else is going to protect our money? I mean, we better protect our money. And so this is, I look at this like a financial literacy skill, just like you would learn to balance your checkbook or look at your credit card statement before you pay it to make sure there aren't fees or charges for things that you didn't purchase. This is just a financial literacy skill that no one ever taught us about and no one ever warned us about. And so we've found ourselves in a situation where we just need to bolster our financial literacy. And it does seem hard at first, but actually, if you read my book, I lay it all out there in my book. I have a series of health literacy videos that lay it all out. I put out a free newsletter and I encourage everyone to subscribe. It's at marshallallen.substack.com. That newsletter has free tips, stories about people fighting the system and winning, saving hundreds or even thousands of dollars per healthcare encounter. And so it's just learning this skill. And when you learn the skill, you're empowered and you increase your knowledge and you increase your skill as you go along. So I want to just encourage everyone. I know it sounds discouraging, but you've got to go for it because no one else is going to protect your money but you. So what do I do once I get the bill? Okay, well, what if they don't comply? Well, that's a great question. So the first thing I'm going to do is I am going to request my medical records. The medical records are typically accurate. And you know this as a clinician yourself, but when you do your medical records as a doctor or as a nurse, you're a licensed professional through your state. You are required by state law to make sure those medical records are accurate. So you usually see that the medical records are clear and accurate, but the billing records are the ones that go inaccurate. So when you get the medical records, it's everyone's right under the HIPAA law to have access to your medical records. So I'm going to get my medical record and I'm going to look and see how did they describe the visit that I had? Because I don't think, unless that nurse practitioner is sloppy or unethical, there's no way she could have written in the medical record that she spent 45 to 59 minutes with me. That's impossible. And that's a clear criteria for using this code, this level 4 office visit. So the first thing I'm going to do is get my medical records and I'm going to see how did they describe it. And I'm hoping that she did reflect it accurately. And that's what I would expect. If she didn't, then we're going to have a bigger problem on our hands because then I'm going to call that nurse practitioner and I'm going to say, you did not spend 45 to 59 minutes with me. You did not do a full examination. You didn't take a medical history. We had a 5-minute conversation and you need to correct this in the record and then get it corrected in the bill.
Well, what happens if they say, go fly a kite?
So they can always say, go fly a kite. And you do often find that. So one thing I would say is don't overestimate how complicated it will be. But don't underestimate how complicated it will be. I have had these things get corrected sometimes within 5 minutes. I mean, sometimes what happens, you get a bill and then you call your insurance company. So the other thing I'm going to do, another step that's important to take, I'm going to go on my insurance company website. I have not received an EOB yet. That's the explanation of benefits. I haven't gotten that yet from my insurance plan. So I can already see that they upcoded it, but now I need to see, did my insurance plan process this correctly? So I have to go look and see what's my deductible because this is my first visit. So I didn't have any other payments over the course of the year. So I had to pay my full amount of my deductible. I need to make sure that the deductible, by the way, it's a complicated term, but it's the amount of money that you have to pay before your insurance plan pays anything. So it's kind of one of these ridiculous ways that the insurance companies and our health plans make us pay more than we should because you're already paying your premiums every month and your employer is paying your premiums every month. But then you don't just get the benefits. You still have to pay more before you can access the benefits. So again, another unfair thing that's built into the system that's taking more of our money than it should. But I'm going to make sure that my deductible was processed properly and that the insurance plan actually did pay the portion that it's required to pay so that I'm not paying more than I should. So checking your insurance documents is important. And to give you an example of a really easy one that got solved for me one time, my son went to an urgent care. The urgent care sent me a bill, and the bill showed that the insurance had paid nothing. And I happened to know at the time that my insurance was pretty good. It was super expensive, but it was actually pretty good. So I called the insurance company, and that's, again, it's easy to call your insurance company, look up the number on the back of your insurance card. This is not complicated. And I called the insurance. I said, hey, did you get this $250 bill from this urgent care submitted to you? They said, we have no record of that bill being submitted to us. So all I had to do is call the urgent care and say, hey, you know what? You didn't send this to my insurance company and you sent me a bill. You need to send it to my insurance company. So they did that. The entire bill was paid and I saved $250 in about 5 minutes. So sometimes it's really easy. Sometimes it's hard. So let's talk about if they resist. Let's say the medical record is wrong and the nurse practitioner doesn't take it seriously. I could and I would file a complaint with the licensing board for that nurse practitioner saying this nurse practitioner lied, inaccurately coded and wrote the wrong information on my medical record and refused to correct it. I would do that. And I would warn the nurse practitioner before I do that. And if you file that complaint, that's going to result in the licensing board investigating the nurse's billing practices and coding practices and record keeping. That can lead to discipline for the nurse practitioner. So trust me, that nurse practitioner does not want me filing a complaint with the licensing board in the state about the record keeping that she's doing. So that's a pretty strong lever in my favor to make sure the medical record is correct. Another option, if it went to an extreme, is suing them in small claims court. So I have a whole chapter in my book and I have one of my videos talks about how to protect yourself in small claims court. I probably wouldn't do this over $214, although I might, because I don't like to not pay my bills, to be quite honest. I don't like that idea of just not paying. And so you could tell them, hey, if you are going to be abusive and predatory in your billing practices, you're going to leave me no option but to sue you in small claims court to get this corrected. So that's another option. And that's very effective, by the way. It's a hassle, so you don't want to do it. It can be stressful, but it is extremely effective because let's say it was $2,000 instead of $200. So that's a little more worth it for the effort. You are requiring them to deal with a judge who might rule against them, to probably hire an attorney to sort it out and represent them, or they have to go show up themselves in court, which is a total pain for them. I mean, how much is it going to cost the head of the dermatology practice to go down and meet me at the courthouse? I mean, that's a complete waste of their time, but it's a lot of power we have when we want to use it. You can also tell them I'm going to write complaints online on Yelp, on Google reviews. I'm going to tell the community that you're a practice that is unethical in your billing practices, and I'm going to warn people not to go to you. That is also very effective, especially with a local dermatology practice or dental office. That's one thing I had to do one time with a dentist. I had to tell her, hey, if you don't correct this, you're leaving me no option but to warn other people about your bad behavior.
Well, Marshall, getting up to the break here, but yeah. I just want to say you used a key word there. You have the power. It might take some time, but remember, you have the power.
Correct.
After the break, we're going to talk about trying to avoid these situations in the first place. So we'll get back to that after the break.
Well, the year 2024 is upon us, and it is our chance to get it right and take back a free America. AmericaOutloud.news is your source for uncensored and factual news that facilitates truth and unity among all Americans to restore that American dream we have always cherished. Now is our time, my fellow Americans. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
Cardiovascular disease is the leading cause of death and disability. Lifestyle changes are critical, but you can also support your heart with concentrated nutrients. Healthy Cell created Heart and Vascular Health to support cholesterol and blood pressure with CoQ10, vitamin K2, resveratrol, and soluble fiber. And Healthy Cell's not a pill. It's a patent-pending gel you swallow. Get heart healthy. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. HealthyCell.com. Code OUTLOUD for 25% off.
ASEA believes that inside each of us is the potential to feel our very best. Our redox-based products tap into reserves within you to power your personal well-being. Make our breakthrough products an essential step in fulfilling your greatest potential. ASEA, we power potential. For exclusive savings, use code OUTLOUD to save 15% off your first order today.
Before the break, I asked Marshall Allen to tell us how we can avoid some of these fights in the first place. So Marshall, have at it. What can we do to not get involved in these battles?
Well, that's a great question because, you know, avoiding the fight to begin with is really, really helpful. You know, if you wait until you get the bill on the back end, that can be a hassle to untangle it. The first thing I think that we want to do is make sure that you're only getting services that you actually need. And this can be a challenge because we're not the doctors or the clinicians who are recommending that we get certain types of treatment. But I like to say that the only thing worse than paying an outrageous medical bill is paying an outrageous medical bill for a service that you didn't need in the first place. And so I like to say that there's one key question that I recommend people ask their doctor or whoever the clinician is serving them before you get it. And a lot of times this isn't for if you go to the emergency room because you've been in a car accident and you're hemorrhaging and you're about to die. Okay. So in an emergency case, we can't ask these kinds of questions, but most of the medical care that people receive is not emergency care. It's discretionary. It's a conversation between you and the clinician about a particular drug they want to put you on or a particular procedure that they want you to consider, or maybe a test or an imaging test or something like that that they want to perform on you. And so that's a conversation where we have to give our consent to undergo any type of treatment. And the key question that I think we should all be asking our clinician when they propose some type of treatment or test or drug, we should say, what happens if we wait? What happens if we don't do this right now? When you ask that question and consider it from that angle, all of a sudden now you're requiring the clinician to discuss what happens if we don't take action rather than the assumption that we're going to take action, that we're just going to wing it and try something. And I'll give you an example. My wife, unfortunately, over the course of her lifetime has suffered from migraines. And every now and then, she would get a migraine that would be so severe that we'd have to take her. She'd be vomiting and losing fluids, and we'd have to take her to an urgent care and have her get some fluids and get some nausea medication just to kind of make sure she doesn't get too dehydrated and also so that the vomiting will stop. And on different occasions, some of the doctors who would see us in these situations would say, well, we need to do an MRI in this situation just to make sure that she, and then you would ask, well, why do we need to do the MRI? Well, we want to make sure that she's not somehow having some type of a bleed in her brain that's causing this migraine. And my response that I would always take my wife on these cases, in these cases, thankfully I could be with her, but I would say, well, is there some indication that makes you think right now she's having a brain bleed? No, but it's just something that we want to rule out. Well, I would say, what happens if we, you know, don't do this right now? You know, is she going to, you know, she's had these migraines her whole life. She has these symptoms are compatible with the other symptoms she's had in the past. Is it really something that you think we need to do, or is it just something that you want to do as an exploratory thing? Well, no, they would say we don't need to do it, but it's just something to do just to be safe, just to explore it. And then in those cases, we knew that this is a common thing that happens with my wife. We don't need to do that. She had no other symptoms, by the way, of having an aneurysm or bleeding out in her brain. So there wasn't any reason to do this. But I think reframing that conversation by saying what happens if we wait is a very helpful conversation to have. And then if it's not dangerous to wait, if you can step back, take time, watch and see if you can make other changes to take care of what other ailment you're going through, you can have time then to go get a second opinion, to do some research online to make sure it really is something that you need. And sometimes these things just resolve themselves.
Well, it's interesting, and I'll tell you something that strikes me as you've told a couple of these stories is very key for patients, listeners to hear. You went to an urgent care center. You did not go to the emergency room. Mm-hmm. And that's a big savings right off the bat.
Huge. I mean, I had a case of, you know, you never know what people don't know. And so I wrote that in my book, you know, to make sure you avoid the emergency room whenever you can. My nephew read my book. He's about 30 years old. And he didn't know that, you know, he had no idea that it was more expensive to go to the emergency room. And so he does home remodeling. He unfortunately was changing out a window and got a big old gash in his thumb. And rather than go to the emergency room, he went to the urgent care. And the urgent care he went to is in Colorado, where they require them to list their prices, which is awesome. He saw the prices that he was going to get. Now he needed stitches. It was obvious the problem he had. So they stitched him up, and he did another thing that I recommend that everyone do, which is ask for a discount. So let's say, again, with my dermatology visit, if they won't be fair and recode it, but then I tell them, well, look, you need to give me a discount then. Always ask for a discount. The three magic words that I like to say are, is it negotiable? Because it's always negotiable. These prices are made up to begin with. So if they want any money from you, they will often give you a discount, and that will take something off the top right there. So my nephew asked for a discount, and he ended up paying about $200 to get his thumb stitched up, which is actually, it was a lot of stitches. That's a really fair price. If he would have gone to an emergency room at a hospital, I've seen people charge $6,000 for three stitches at the hospital. So he saved himself a pile of money by avoiding the emergency room.
So this, I'll just say, now hear this. This is so important. And there's too many people, despite having insurance, this happened in my husband's company. He bought insurance for his employees, but one of the employees would go to the emergency room because he says, well, it's more convenient. And my husband, all he could do is throw up his arms that it's ultimately going to cost him more money because this person wasted money on going to the emergency room for things that aren't an emergency. And just you talk about sort of that moral ethical thread. Think about it. If you aren't really an emergency, why would you want to take resources from somebody who really is coming in with a heart attack or, you know, bleeding scalp that needs those resources? And frankly, the waits are too long in emergency rooms. And if you don't have anything better to do with your time than sit in a chair for 4 hours waiting to be seen, shame on you.
Well, this also underscores the importance of educating employees, because people have the wrong idea. They think that someone else is paying for their healthcare. They think, oh, well, my employer is paying for it, or the government is paying for it, or the insurance company is paying for it. So they say, oh, well, I'm going to hit my deductible anyway, so it doesn't really matter what I pay. That is absolutely wrong. If you're on an employer-sponsored health plan, the money that your employer is paying for all your insurance benefits, that's coming out of your compensation. That's the same pool of money that's used to give the employees raises every year and provide other benefits like contributions to 401ks or other types of benefits. So if we waste the money by overpaying, because it's coming out of that pool of our compensation. So what's happening is employees are like, well, I hit my deductible, so I don't really care. I'm going to go wherever I want. I'm going to get whatever unnecessary treatment I want. I'm going to go to the emergency room just because I think it's convenient. That is the dumbest thing that they can do, because then the employer's money that they're allocating to compensation for the employees is getting completely wasted. And then the next year, when that employer wants to give everyone a pay raise, well, those dumb employees, those ignorant, uninformed employees, again, I don't mean to say that they're dumb because they're not intelligent people, but they are ignorant about the way the system works. And so they need to get educated so they protect that money so that they value it. And that way the employer can give everyone a raise next year instead of just taking more money from their compensation and paying it on higher deductibles and higher premiums and higher healthcare costs.
Well, thank you for that, because that's a very common sense and logical way to look at it. So in the end, an employee is helping themselves by not abusing the system. I'd like you to talk about drugs for a minute and how people can get their drugs cheaper than using the insurance. This is pharmaceuticals, as you talked about early on. They're part of this big medical industrial complex. And too many times with these short visits we have with the doctor, what's the answer? Write a script for something and send the patient off to the pharmacy. And the patient certainly doesn't know any better. And one of the first things I tell somebody, make sure that that script is something that's not already an over-the-counter med as a way to get it cheaper. What are other ways you can get cheaper drugs?
Well, so you want to see if there's a generic available. You know, the generics have the same chemical composition of certain specialty drugs. So if there's a generic available, that's going to be way less expensive than a specialty drug. So that's just a basic kind of like drug medication 101. See if you can do the generic. And not everybody can comply with the generic, I understand. So it's not going to work in every case, but it's something that people want to try. Then another thing, you know, that cost of the drug could vary depending on where you fill the prescription. So let's say they send you to your local Walgreens down the street. You know, they're always like, well, what pharmacy do you prefer? And so you say, well, the CVS, the Walgreens, whatever it is down the street from you. Well, before you go pick it up, you can find out from them what's it going to cost. And then you can pretty easily call other pharmacies and look at other prices and see if it's going to be a big price difference. You can also look at GoodRx or other types of these cards where you can look up prices online. Go to GoodRx.com, type in the name of the drug that you need, and it will show you prices that are available through these coupons that they have. And so that can drop the price a lot. If it's a drug that you know that you're going to need, there are also some pharmacies online that have membership programs. So like I like to point people to Good Shepherd Pharmacy. This is a pharmacy in Tennessee that has a membership program where for a low monthly cost, you can get the generics that you need. You can get the insulin that you need. And then this is a really outrageous one, but there's a company called the Canadian Med Store. Okay. It's the website is drugstoreunlimited.com. And this is so crazy and off the wall. It sounds wrong, but trust me, it's right. But now what they can do with specialty drugs, it is actually cheaper for them to import your specialty drug from Canada, New Zealand, England, Australia, these other English-speaking developed countries. It's cheaper sometimes to import the specialty drug that you need from overseas or from Canada rather than buying it here in the United States. It's the same drug made by the same company, same dosage, but because of all of the games where middlemen in the United States are jacking up the prices of our drugs, it can often be cheaper to get it by importing it from elsewhere around the world. That's insanity. It just shows how absurdly dysfunctional our healthcare system is. But for patients, again, we're put in a position that's very unfair, completely ridiculous, but we have to fight for ourselves here, okay? If you need that drug and you can save hundreds or thousands of dollars on that drug, it's a pretty convenient way to get it. And you just have to figure it out, you know? So again, it's not fair that we have to go through this, but I always tell people like, do you want to save thousands of dollars? Do you want to save hundreds of dollars? And sometimes, you know, I've talked to people who don't want to save that money. I had a call with one guy one time. He went through all the steps that I recommend, and he could see that he was overpaying and being overcharged by $2,000. And he said, you know what? It's not my worth my time to fight it. And then I was like, I didn't say this to the guy, but I wanted to be like, well, then don't waste my time. You know, like, oh, if you want to have the attitude where you're just going to pay more than you should, well, then you're just going to perpetuate this behavior. And so I tried to encourage him, and I do encourage other people, even if you have the money to pay, stand up for yourself, because when you do that, you're standing up against a system that's exploiting other people that don't have the ability to pay. We have about 100 million Americans right now with medical debt that's in collections, or excuse me, with medical debt. And we have about 1 in 5 or 1 in 6 Americans that has medical debt in collections. So if, you know, some people can just say, oh, no problem, $2,000, I'm just going to pay it. Most people can't do that. And those people, unfortunately, are being saddled by medical debt.
Well, this is such wonderful information to have. And one of the key points you made here is it's got to be us that stands up, because the grand poobahs and the higher ups and even our legislators, they aren't really looking out for us. They get millions and millions and millions of dollars from these companies, and there's millions spent on lobbyists. We don't have the money, but what we do have is our voice and our moxie, and it's worth it to take the time to fight. Now, Marshall, can you tell people again how they can get a hold of you? And they must read your book, because we've only scratched the surface. And I'll say the title of the book, Never Pay the First Bill and Other Ways to Fight the Healthcare System and Win. And we'll have it up on our shop site. And what is your website where people can get more of your information?
Well, one way to stay in touch with what I'm doing, and if people want to learn, is to sign up for my newsletter. And that's at marshallallen.substack.com. You can also message me on my website. That's marshallallen.com. And I try and respond to all messages. So if people have questions or need help, you can reach out to me. And then if you really want to get educated, I encourage people to watch my healthcare literacy videos, The Never Pay Pathway. And you can see those at allenhealthacademy.com.
Well, thank you so much for all that information. Thank you for coming on the show. And I'm sure we'll talk again.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me here.
And I'd like to thank everybody for listening to America Out Loud Pulse. As you know, we are always a beat ahead. I urge you to look at our trending cloud. It's kind of been revamped on the website this year, and we still have our email feature where you can write a question. First names are fine, and we'll get an answer back to you. And as I mentioned, we have our shopping site. It's americaoutloud.shop. It's got the books that are written by our guests, as well as other books of interest. It's got the products we talk about. And if you put in out loud, you'll get a discount as the discount code. So whether you agree or have other opinions, please share the show. And until next week, say it loud. I'm free and I'm proud.